Around the world on RyderCup.com and the official Ryder Cup app. This is Ryder Cup Radio, presented by Econocom. Day 3 review.
The Ryder Cup is back in the hands of Team Europe.
And Phil Mickelson shakes the hand of Francesco Molinari, and Europe have won the Ryder Cup, and it's the Open champion who seals the win, the new superstar of European golf, as Frankie goes to Hollywood and seals the deal for Europe.
So Molinari secures that win after delivering a five-star performance.
Better than anything I could imagine and dream of. But the most special thing, honestly, and I'm not just saying this, it's being part of this group of players. Everyone involved with the team, the players, the vice captains, Thomas, the wives, the people behind the scene helping us. We just came together as an amazing team this week, and you know, the result was never going to be different.
The USA applied early pressure, but Jim Furyk's men were ultimately blown away.
They did a great job top to bottom. I think Thomas was a wonderful captain. I think he put him in good positions. And I think those players played some unbelievable golf this year. They hit the key shots. The crowd here was loud, and they knew this golf course very well. They were prepared.
With all the fallout from a dramatic final day at Le Golf National, right here on Ryder Cup Radio. Hello, I'm Richard Kaufman, and what a thrilling finale we were treated to at this 2018 Ryder Cup at Le Golf National. Alongside me, two-time Ryder Cup winner Gordon Brand Jr., US broadcaster Matt Adams. Of course, overnight, guys, it was 10-6, the lead for Europe. We've been here before. We've seen the comebacks at Medina and Brookline. Nobody said it was over. Your thoughts, really, on what we've seen on the Sunday singles, Matt?
It was a tall task. Obviously, the USA team was up against it. They would have had to have done something remarkable. They would have had to have done something historic. It's only been done a couple of times to dig your way out of a hole that was as deep as it was coming into this Sunday morning. It was incredibly entertaining on both sides with the matches that we watched and the way that each player's fought.
Gordon, the atmosphere out there, I mean, in beautiful sunshine as well. It was picture perfect, wasn't it?
I think the national course has stood up to all the hype it deserves. But then when you put the stands and you had those incredible spectators down, I mean, around 18, 15, 16, 17, it was just unbelievable. You couldn't get a better place, a better amphitheatre for this. This final few holes was just incredible. And even when Garcia held the putt on the last and he was standing there and there was tears in his eyes, I think there was a tears in an awful lot of people's eyes of emotion and it's done. But, I mean, the whole journey for this team was incredible. And Le National come out the winner.
Yeah, well, Team Europe, as we mentioned, 10-6 lead overnight against the United States. Let's hear how this final day drama unfolded on the outskirts of Paris.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. May I welcome you to Le Golf National Paris for the final day's play of the 2018 Ryder Cup.
Justin Thomas, who led at the first hole, leads at the final hole. So it's a win for the USA. Justin Thomas has beaten Rory McIlroy one up.
This for the win! Ice cool, just ice cool from Webb Simpson. He watched Justin Rose hole. He holes himself. He wins 3-2 on the 16th green. And the players shake hands after a wonderful Ryder Cup match. But a point here for the USA.
And he's knocked it in. Cool as a cucumber. Both players four under. A very strong game of golf that both these players played. And they shake hands on 18. And it's a half.
Congratulations, Tony Finau. 6-4 over Tommy Fleetwood.
He leaves his putter on the ground. And he pumps the air once, twice, three times and screams. Now a big hug from his caddy. What an emotional roller coaster ride those last 15 minutes have been for Jon Rahm. And it ends in a 2-1 victory for the Spaniard.
And Poulter turns to the crowd, thumps his chest, thumps the badge, the European badge.
And Phil Mickelson shakes the hand of Francesco Molinari. bottom, and it's the Open champion who seals the win. The new superstar of European golf, as Frankie goes to Hollywood and seals the deal for Europe. Bedlam out here on the 16th tee.
The winners of the 42nd Ryder Cup, it's Steve Yarrow!
Spine-tingly commentary there from our team, Carl Paulson, Ron Jones, Raymond Burns, from Matt Adams, Gordon Brown Jr., who are alongside me here, from Paul Ills and Dave Farrer, from Sue Thurl and from Mark Farry, bringing you all the action on a sensational Sunday close to historic Versailles. Well, it's been a great 3 days, but today was a day where you felt there was an opportunity maybe at some point that the Americans in those top matches were maybe doing enough, Matt, and you thought that maybe something special could be on the cards for Jim Furyk.
Yeah, because of the way that it started with the first few matches going the American way and close, you felt like it could tumble in either direction. But ultimately, what happened was the class and depth of the European team that they had displayed all week won the day.
Well, let's hear from the man who actually ended up sealing the win for Europe. Here's Francesco Molinari.
Better than anything I could imagine and dream of. But the most special thing, honestly, and I'm not just saying this, it's being part of this group of players. Everyone involved with the team, the players, the vice captains, Thomas, the wives, the people behind the scene helping us. We just came together as an amazing team this week, and you know, the result was never going to be different.
Can you even begin to describe the feeling when Phil offered his hand to you up on the 16th tee?
Yeah, well, a bit anticlimactic, because obviously I was hoping to make the putt on 15, because it would have been a great moment, but you know, amazing.
And every one of your teammates has said how happy they are it was you who won the key match, and that must mean a lot too.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I had a good team record because I won 2 out of 2, but I still had to bring a full point to the team before this week, and obviously to bring 5, you know, what more can you ask?
No European man has ever done that before. 5 wins in 5 sessions, Gordon, from Francesco Molinari.
Well, not only champion golfer of the year, i.e. picking up the Open Championship, he's the European golfer of the year, I feel. Extraordinary, isn't he? He's so calm, and he plays the same game day in and day out, and it was just the right moment for him. It was so great to see him win the winning putt, or the winning point for the European team. He's an exceptional player, and I just don't understand how he plays the same game all the time. It really is religious of how he plays the game. Unemotional man when he won the Open. There wasn't a great deal of emotion. I wonder if he just feels that this is what I am looking for, and when he achieves it, it's not that much of a shock to him. And here, you know, 5 points is extraordinary for a golfer to come to this stage, and as a key man in world golf, to be the man I want to beat. He walks away with 5 points. Extraordinary man.
He's a quiet man, as Gordon's saying, a little understated, but the last 7-8 months, he's just let his golf do the talking, and boy, did they talk this week. The golf that he played was sensational,
and it spoke very loudly too, not only at the Open, not only this week at the Ryder Cup, but that steady as she goes approach that Francesco Molinari takes with his play. I think it's a steady as she goes way that he is with his entire life. However, his ball striking is better than it's ever been. His putting is sounder than it's ever been. At times, he was a little streaky with the flat stick. He's not streaky with anything right now. He tees it up, and you know that he's going to be in contention week in and week out at any tournament. And at the Ryder Cup, he has proven himself a very quiet leader.
Just one of those guys that does everything very well. You know, there's no flash, because I don't think he needs a flash. He just needs someone. I'll put this ball in the middle of the fairway, I'll rifle at the pin, and I'll knock a few putts in. That, what
I don't
a great
think
combination.
There's a consideration of doing it otherwise.
No.
And to put him with Fleetwood was the absolute perfect pairing, because Fleetwood is flash. He's a superstar. That's who he is. That's what he is. And it was absolutely perfectly balanced.
It was Mollywood, as they were coined. And a lovely message from his brother, who's reacted on social media, saying, what a year. This is from Eduardo Molinari, of course, who played alongside him at the Ryder Cup at Celtic Manor in 2010. He says, what a year for my little brother. European Tour win, PGA Tour win, Open win, top five of the world rankings, Ryder Cup win, nothing left on the table. Well done, Mr. Laser Frankie, as he calls him. I'm very proud of you. It's time now to start a very long comeback to get closer to you. I mean, there's a few players around the world that like to get closer to him. Yeah, congratulations to Francesco Molinari. What a year it's been from the Italian. And what a week it's been from Thomas Bjorn. Obviously, he had been going out to start the week hoping the result would end as it did. He is the winning captain. Here is Thomas Bjorn.
Unbelievable. You know, when you work with guys this closely and a group like this that is just different class, they really are as a group. They're great friends and they want the best for each other. It becomes fairly easy, to be honest, but that doesn't mean you don't go through the emotion with all of these fans and everybody that lives everything we are as a European Ryder Cup team. And these scenes are just the best thing ever. And, you know, we played a side that arguably on paper is the best American side ever, and for these guys to stand up and do what they've done this week is something that's going to take a long time for me before it actually settles with me. Because when I stood on that first tee this morning and watched those 12 Americans come down those steps, I thought, when there's a one that's going to come down that's not a superstar, and it never really happened, so I knew that we could be up against it, but these 12 has just been tremendous. They really have.
The winning captain there, Thomas Bjorn. Just to remind you how things went, the USA actually won the first session on Friday by 3-1. Then that unprecedented clean sweep for Europe in the foursomes 4-0, which meant Europe led 5-3 after day one. Then they won the session Saturday morning in the four balls by 3-1 before it finished 2-2 in the foursomes, meaning 5-3 on Saturday as it was on Friday, meaning 10-6 overall. That captaincy from Thomas Bjorn, do we overstate the captain's role, or did Thomas Bjorn here play a blinder?
He played an absolute blinder. From his selections, which we've debated about, of Garcia and the other people, I don't know how many points it ended up with, 6 or 7 points. The rookies the picks have actually come out of Thomas Bjorn.
He's 9-4-1.
9-4-1.
How about that record?
Yeah, that is exceptional. So did he know something we didn't, or did he inspire them more than any other captain? The golf course, he set up the golf course brilliantly as well. He realised that Europe were slightly better at driving the ball down the fairway, keeping it in play, and that was a key thing. So they made the rough very chewy, and that's actually how it panned out. I mean, some of the first 2 days, they certainly didn't get the golf course, the Americans. They were hitting it all over the place. And it wasn't necessarily pretty, but it put Europe in a very strong place.
Yeah, Matt, your thoughts on that? Or maybe a reflection in contrast to Jim Furyk? Because, you know, there's nothing better than a winning captain. Normally the losing captain is the one that's obviously going to get the criticism.
Well, yesterday we were on the sixth hole with Mark Ferry, and I were on it, and he actually at one point, unprompted, turned to me and he said, I remember that hole was drivable day one, but then they moved the tees back and it was still a flip wedge. But the rough on each side of that hole was absolutely lethal. Mm. And the majority of the drives that I saw were in the rough. Mm. And he turned to me and he said, Matty, he said, I don't know why the American team is not just hitting a hybrid or a fairway metal in hitting the fairway. It's a short hole. You don't need to blast it as far as you possibly can to ensure that you've still got a wedge in your hand to get on the green. And time and again, we saw that not only on that hole, but on many holes, that it was started with tee box management. It started with get the ball in the fairway. The course is not so long that you need to hit it as far as you possibly can. You might come in with one extra club, if that, when it's all said and done, because the fairway still released some. So I think that, at these early stages, if I had to point to a story within a story, it started with tee box management, because that's when that rough bit, because all the players on both sides faced the same rough. It was just the American side more often than the European side that found it.
Yeah, just to go on that wild card points one this week, 9.5 points from the European wild card picks, just 2.1 by the American wildcard picks, three of them with 0 points. Bryson, of course, DeChambeau, Phil Mickelson and Tiger Woods. Let's get some more reaction, shall we, from the winning side.
This one's extra special. You know, it's on European soil. I'm 42. I'm getting no younger. 4 years' time, it'll be back in Europe. And, you know, these little legs might be too old. So today was about delivering a point for Thomas to get it done. And we've done it. I couldn't be more proud of this team.
Ryder Cup winners, yeah. Just brilliant. You know, for the fans, for Thomas, for the staff, for vice captains, for the team. It's just amazing, isn't it? It's just something else. And we've got it back, and here's my wife.
Incredible. Francesco Molinari, 5 out of 5. He's been a warrior all week. He's been relentless all week, delivering points, but also his messaging in the team room as well has been on point. Great leader for the team. This team has been so strong. It's funny, isn't it? Because halfway through the day, it's all a bit nerve-wracking. You think you can go the other way, but the middle order just absolutely pulled through for us, which is incredible.
Yeah, you heard from Ian Poulter there, Tommy Fleetwood and Justin Rose. You could hear the noise behind. It was complete bedlam out there at times. But I think the message from all of them, and we heard it from Thomas Bjorn as well, Gordon, and you've been on two winning teams as well. Team effort here.
I've just written some words down. Team, group, came together, proud of. You know, and we hear it so much about the Europeans. I think we're just happy to be in each other's company, because we spend years and years with these players as a group when we play the European Tour. I just think we are a little bit more comfortable, and I think that transcends in a European team room as I'm your buddy, I'm going to play for you.
Yeah, I mean, but there was this feeling, I thought, as well, not only the American players so talented, 9 major champions among their group, but they had this natural camaraderie that comes from some of the friendships, going on holidays together. They didn't seem to have that mixture there this week, or it doesn't seem to translate it in the great golf, at least.
Yeah, I mean, it comes down to how you translate and try to define a loss. If you look at it from the standpoint of saying, well, it has to have something to do with their relationship and how they work together and how they feel of what they feel of each other as teammates, then you're going to be reading the clouds. I think what happened I'll admit myself, I didn't give it enough credit. I think that the Europeans, with the experience that they had in this golf course and their knowledge of how to manage the golf course, was the difference that saw them get ahead. And then after that, Team USA was pressing because they had no other choice but to press.
And it's not a golf course to press on, is it?
No, and because I can give the opinion of what it's like to be in a team room, but we don't actually really know what a USA team room is how great or bad it is. And, you know, it probably is the same function as a
sure.
European team room.
Yeah, I think they had every bit as much emotion. I think they're every bit as much inclined to put an arm around each other's shoulders. In fact, I think they've strived to show the world in recent years to say, no, this isn't about a team of 12 individuals. This is a team.
And that's why they put them in the pods, Matt. You know, that's part of that, isn't it?
Well, it's a whole variety of things. It's how the message that they send forth and the way they're doing the communications and the way they're doing their ascensions of captains and vice captains and everything that goes along with it. I just think that there's one little piece in the secret of why Europe has won 9 of the last 12 Ryder Cups, and that is when they host the Ryder Cups, they generally host him on courses that they have events on. It's so simple, it's right in front of your nose.
So Whistling Straits doesn't provide that, does it?
No, think about that. Hazeltine didn't provide that. When you look at it from the American side, they don't take the same approach as the Europeans do in going to a place that they know like their backyard.
And as a word of warning, at the moment, there's never been a European Tour event in the next staging on European soil, the course in Rome. They've got to get that ready yet, but I'm sure they'll try and do so for at least a couple of European Tour events. We need to go through what happened in the Sunday singles. Just to remind you, 10-6 overnight. The first match that was completed was, well, a sensational one. The game between Justin Thomas and Rory McIlroy. Thomas holding a great putt on the first to go one up. He didn't lead again until the very final hole. Rory McIlroy missed some really good chances to maybe go 1, 2, 3 up when he had those putts from inside 15 feet at both the 14th, the 15th, the 16th hole. It went to the 18th all square, and then Thomas hit this monstrous drive into the tightest part of the fairway. Walter left. McIlroy ended up plugged in the bunker, couldn't get it out, then put it in the water. And, well, they carried on playing, but there was no way that Justin Thomas was going to lose it from there. So a great start for the US, who were led out, as we say there, by Justin Thomas.
I hit some really quality shots. Rory hit some very quality shots as well. Just couldn't quite get the ball to go in the hole, both of us. Hit some really good putts, burned some edges, and it was nice to close it out there with a good drive and second shot on 18.
After your great start on the first, of course, he was up for most of the match, wasn't he?
He was, yeah. I kind of gave him gifts there on 2, 3, and 4. You know, I hit a putt a little bit too hard there on 3, and then just hit a terrible chip on 4. So to give him a couple holes, but it was huge getting that back to what I did after 10 holes and having a chance.
Yeah, Ron talking there with Justin Thomas. If there is a standout player for Team USA, he's the man.
First rookie to win 4 or more matches since Larry Nelson did it in 1979. That says it all.
And going back to the point you made about 2 minutes ago, Matt, the fact that he played the French Open, mm-hmm. is that a coincidence?
No, I think people might be reading a little bit too much into that, but it certainly didn't hurt him. I think that Justin Thomas won, particularly in that match against Rory McIlroy, and it was a knockdown affair between them, was because of the bravery that he showed off the tee at 18. There was a lot of risk in what he did, and Rory got unlucky with what happened with his ball in that bunker.
We hadn't had a match halved at the Ryder Cup in 2018 until match number 2. It was a real ding-dong battle between Brooks Koepka and Paul Casey. Casey, who's can't stop crying, actually, at this Ryder Cup, actually told everyone that he cries his way through multiple films when he's watching them as well. He's an emotional guy, and he was in tears again after that half match that led to the scoreline 10.5, 7.5. Go on, Gordon.
We were with him.
Yeah,
I was going to say. Matt and I were with him.
So tell us about this game then.
It was just an exhibition of wonderful golf. Both players were around in 4 under par. And I think it probably finished the way it should have finished. They were both as brilliant as each other. To watch Paul Casey play is exceptional. But that's the first time I've really seen Brooks Koepka, and he looks strong. Two strong, very, very strong characters. And for Casey to get a half on double US Open winner, I think that was a result for Casey.
Yeah, having won 3 of the last 5 major championships. What's so impressive when you're watching Brooks Koepka play is he finds the ball, he absolutely smashes it, he finds it again, and he smashes it again. That's his style of playing. Nothing seems to bother him. Paul Casey never let up. Just hung in there with him all day. If you were looking, most of the drives, they were right around the same distance. Occasionally, like on 18, Brooks Koepka smashed it, 23 yards past him, yeah. I think you said, Richard, when you were throwing it out to us at one point. So, yeah, it was really fun to watch, and it was fun to watch both players sticking with the other player all the way through.
But cool as a cucumber, because he hit a terrible shot into 18, didn't he? Dragged it into the left-hand trap. Casey's Brooks, in the middle of the green, and Brooks just gets up. It's just like a friendly game, wasn't it? Out 4 foot, calm in. You know, there was a lot of, you know, calmness in the man and not a great deal of emotion. So, you know, you can see why he's won the US Open. You know, Fleetwood posted 63, and he's got to bring it in. And it was cool there as well. It was just lovely golf to watch.
Yeah, 1.5 points apiece as well for both those players. A terrific conclusion to the match between Webb Simpson and Justin Rose. Match number 3, 16th. They both hit it in birdie range around 15 feet or so. Rose had the first birdie putt, knocked it in, meaning Webb Simpson had to knock his in to win the match. And of course, Webb did that, winning it by 3 and 2, making the scoreline at the time a little tighter. Europe 10, USA 8.5. The American delighted to earn his second point of the week.
It was fun. You know, Rosie's such a great player, so I knew it was going to be tough. But played solid today. You know, the last couple of days have been big for me. And, you know, I'm thankful to get the point for the team, and hopefully I can go out and root them on.
That was Webb Simpson's reaction. He only played, 3 matches? Matt, I was interested in hearing Thomas Bjorn talking in the press conference yesterday, saying that this golf course, if you can think of one that's similar in the United States, is Sawgrass, where, of course,
yeah,
Webb was champion. Should he have played more?
Well, coming in today, he had only played three, as you noted, 2-1-1 this week, which is a pretty good record. The interesting thing about Webb Simpson is that people forget that he won the Players. And it's interesting that with the Pete Dye connection here, sort of, kind of, in like 15 and 18, and how that whole part of the golf course feels to me like it could be in West Palm Beach or Sawgrass, as you said. Webb Simpson is like a silent assassin. He's not a player when people see him on a list that say, oh, watch out for that guy. He's going to come out. Even if his team loses, he'll come out of the week with a winning record. And then before you know it, you look back and go, wow, he did do it. He does it his own way.
Yeah, I should point out it was 10.5, 8.5. They were within 2 points at that stage. And then they moved within a point, didn't they, with what was a bit of a surprising margin of victory for Tony Finau against Tommy Fleetwood, given the way that Fleetwood had performed the first 4 days. Finau got up ahead and, you know, he was never going to be caught. In the end, winning by 5-4. I mean, the fact that Fleetwood lost, it shouldn't take away anything from what he did this week.
Oh, no, he's been exceptional. Maybe he was just a bit tired at the end of the week. He'd played all four sessions. But Tony, I mean, he it was going to be a dreadful, dreadful debut for him, wasn't it? And thank God he's gone out and played like we were hoping he was going to play this week. Because, you know, I am European, there's no question about it, but you want professionals, golfers, all these teams to perform and come away and go, you know what, you played better than me. That's what you want. You don't want someone coming playing so badly that he's a burden to the team. And thank God he stepped up today.
Yeah, Brooks Koepka is... he's a star in waiting if he hasn't already claimed the mantle. Brooks Koepka today just finally got the wind, Tony Finau, I beg your pardon. Tony just finally got the wind in his sail. And when it was with him, he absolutely did exactly what he's capable of doing. He's a massive player. He's a big man, and he hits the ball a mile. And when he found his range and he found the fairway, everything changed.
So that was the next match that had finished. As I say, 10.5, 9.5. It got to within a point, but you knew there were some European wins coming around the corner. Now, when people looked at the lineup and saw Torbjörn Olesen was playing against Jordan Spieth, most people came to the assumption that the three-time major champion was going to win that one. But Matt, 5-4 the score. I've got to say that's impressive from Torbjörn, whatever you have to say, but Jordan's record in singles in the President's Cup or the Ryder Cup is not impressive.
0-6 right now, in
fact,
with that loss. So if you were aware of that coming into it, I don't think you would have been as quick to say that Thorbjorn did not have a chance against him. But again, you had another young guy, a guy in his 20s that's on this stage that has this opportunity, and he absolutely seized it. He's one of the stars of the game of tomorrow. And again, I don't mean to take anything away from by calling him a star of tomorrow, but keep an eye on guys like him because he's got the length, he's got the style, he's got the game, and with this little bit of confidence, who knows?
Gordon, what's impressive for me is, you know, the guy sits out. He played Friday morning. Thomas Bjorn had to leave him out. They're good friends. It's something he didn't want to do, but of course he had this plan, and in the end he couldn't drop Fleetwood and Molinari because of the way they were going. And poor Torbjörn had to sit out and watch and act as cheerleader to come out on a Sunday against a player of the caliber of Jordan Spieth and beaten 5-4. My goodness, how proud must he be feeling?
Yeah, I mean, extraordinary for him to play so well, and he'll be so proud. But you're asking a player to wait a couple more days to play in the Ryder Cup on Sunday. They've waited 25 years. The build-up's been massive for them. It's not just 2 days that I'm in the team, I'm going to play. You know, this has been a massive... So when he's got his opportunity, he's going to relish it. I mean, you cannot underestimate the excitement that the crowd bring. And being in that team room and putting the jacket on and putting your sweater on and getting ready for a game of golf that is beyond anyone's belief of how nervous you're going to be. And so a lot of players, I was saying to Matty walking down the fairway, we're graced by some players that just become great Ryder Cup players.
Yeah.
That step up. And some of them are the best golfers in the world. And then other players just happen to be brilliant Ryder Cup players.
And I think it was fairly apt. There were only two European players who came into the singles without a point or half a point to their name. And they happened to be the first European winners of the Sunday singles. The first we mentioned there was Torbjörn Ottosson. The second of those was John Rahm, who was taking on Tiger Woods. Rahm missed this short putt at 16, and suddenly from two up, he was now heading up 17, one up. Hit this brilliant drive down the middle of the fairway. Tiger Woods was in the left-hand rough. Tiger managed to get it out and get it up to the edge of the green. Rahm hits his second into 8 feet. Tiger chips up, looks certain for his par. So now Rahm has to hold it from 8 feet or so down the slope to win the match. The ball, as it trickled down to the hole, the putter flung out of his hand. He knew it was in, and he went absolutely berserk, roaring and punching the air like you've never seen anyone out there today. There were some great exuberant celebrations from people, but none more so than what we saw from John Rahm. Fantastic win for him to win that 2-1 over Tiger Woods and make the scoreline reading 12.5, 9.5. For Rahm personally, obviously, that was a big deal, Matt.
This goes back to what Gordy was just saying. Don't think for a second that young junior golfers in Spain are not terribly aware of the history of Spanish golfers in the Ryder Cup and very much want to be that next star. He just became it.
Yeah, let's get a little bit of reaction from John Rahm. It was obviously after Europe had won. He was understandably emotional in the aftermath of that.
This is by far the greatest day of my golf career. I mean, to play the way I did, to beat Tiger Woods, to be what I knew it was a vital point. It was the first blue on the board. There was a lot going through my mind, and to finish with that birdie, you know, it was right after that birdie when all the points just started coming in. So I knew it was important. I knew we needed that one, and I'm glad I didn't have to go to 18.
Yeah, I bet he was. A great victory for John Rahm. Ian Poulter, just think where he was 2 years ago, out injured, acting as vice-captain at Hazeltine. Well, the postman delivered again, didn't he? Beating Dustin Johnson 2 up to make the scoreline 13.5, 9.5. You know, he's got a grown-up son. He was here. Both of them were in tears. Almost got me going, I have to say, at the time as well. To be where he's come from 2 years ago, to say when he was out injured, looking like he was going to lose his PGA Tour card, to saying, I'm going to be on that team when they teared up at France, and then to deliver what he has here. I mean, you can understand why the tears flowed, Matt.
It's the story of Ian Poulter's career, really. When he was a young professional, the first pro that he worked for charged him a full green fee in order to play in competitions. So he didn't play in competitions because he couldn't afford it. When he decided to turn pro, he was a 4 handicap. Ian Poulter is a guy that's never lacked belief in himself, and he set his mind on getting back in this Ryder Cup team and delivering, as you just said. And he did it again. And it's the story that Ian Poulter keeps writing.
It's like someone, you know, they talk the talk, but, well, he walks the walk. You know, what he thinks he wants to do, I don't know how he does it, but he does it. You know, I'm not saying he's not a great player, but he hasn't got the best game in the world. We've heard it a million times, but that self-belief in him, he believes that he can actually do anything. He can actually beat anyone in the world, and he can beat on any team in the world. And when you bring that spirit to the Ryder Cup, and we know we go on and on about Poults, he just is one of those people that ups his game and becomes an exceptional character in the tea rooms, an exceptional character on the golf course. He inspires.
Yeah, never lost in the singles, and his mesmeric run in the Ryder Cup continues.
14-6-2.
I mean,
thank you very much.
It's worth mentioning that record. It is unbelievable. But yeah, beat the world number one along the way as well, 2 up. So the match that won it, we know, we've kind of talked about it a little bit, Francesco Molinari against Phil Mickelson. Molinari was 3 up early on in that one. Phil had his struggles at the start of the round. He dug deep, to be fair to Phil, kept in there before he put it in the water at 16. But for Mickelson, it's been a Ryder Cup, really, Matt, on the periphery.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that's a fair assessment to make. I believe that Phil Mickelson now has the most match losses of anyone in Ryder Cup history on the U.S. side, which, you know, obviously that's not a reflection of what he does in terms of in the team room and the leadership and all that goes along with it. But when you're out there as either a partner or in singles playing by yourself, Phil's record this week was not good.
Is this his last Ryder Cup, do you think?
I think playing it very wise, well could be.
Obviously, he could be back
I
as
mean,
captain.
Obviously, he has a say in that and what he does and how he performs. Remember, he only finished two spots out of automatically qualifying. He did win this year a World Golf Championship event, but I think it's a very real possibility.
So the scoreline was 14.5, 9.5, which meant, of course, Europe had won the Ryder Cup. They kind of had won the Ryder Cup anyway because there were three matches out of the course, including Francesco's Molinari's one, that were dormy up. So it was just a question of who got the winning point. Henrik Stenson and Sergio Garcia were in a similar position, but it was Molinari with Mickelson's tee shot going in the water where the hands were shaken first. Sergio Garcia beating Ricky Fowler 4-3. Another one who got very emotional with the victory, 15.5, 9.5. Matt, you were there, and of course, afterwards, you caught up with a man who became a record breaker, going above Sir Nick Faudo to 25.5 points in his 9 Ryder Cups. Here's Sergio Garcia.
It's an amazing feeling. Obviously, we fought so hard for this all year, and you know, it's finally here. You know, we got the cup back. That was the main goal. We knew we were playing against a really strong team, so. You know, I'm just really happy that I was able to help, and you know that we got that cup back.
The way that you helped has been a career of helping in the Ryder Cup. You've now surpassed Sir Nick Faldo. It's absolutely remarkable what you've accomplished. Have you had a chance to even think about that yet?
It was never a goal of mine. I've always said it. You know, I'm always more of, you know, team achieving things than myself. Obviously, I know that if I do well, I'm helping the team. But you know, it's a bonus. It's great to be able to be the highest point scorer in Europe. But the most important thing is that we get the cup back. And you know, for a moment here or there, it looked a little tight. So I'm glad that it happened.
3 points this week for Sergio Garcia. I was in Portugal last week where he said, "I've got nothing to prove." But for those that did doubt him, he proved a point.
Oh, he proved it massively, didn't he? One of Thomas's picks, and God, did he perform. He played absolutely fantastic. Every time I was out with him, it was really stunning. And the real stunning thing is his short game, how he chips as well. He just is one of those guys that you could go out and watch forever and be amazed at what he does.
It's a little forgotten, but there was a 100% record for another man in the European team, Henrik Stenson. 3 wins out of 3. That third completed by beating Bubba Watson 5-4 to take the scoreline to 16.5, 9.5. The Swede sealing his own victory right in the aftermath of Europe regaining the cup.
It feels great. I just saw, I think it was right before I hit my second shot, right after I heard everyone go nuts. And yeah, we knew it was close. So obviously Frankie just took it over the finish line. I was in a pretty comfortable position there. I played really solid today. I didn't give Bob anything. And yeah, it was quite a nice ride here on the back nine.
The guys in the middle order today for Thomas Bjorn really came to the party and won big points at the right time, didn't they?
Absolutely. I mean, take Torbjörn, for instance, winning 5-4. So, you know, it's hard not to keep track of what's happening when you're playing. You've got these big screens everywhere. And, yeah, I mean, fantastic effort from the team. I mean, it's been an amazing week, and so proud to be part of this team and so happy for everyone right now.
Sue Thel talking with Henrik Stenson there. Matt, difficult stage now of the Ryder Cup when we're at this point because it was effectively over, yet they have to complete their matches.
Yeah, sure, which is understandable. I think when we talk about Henrik Stenson, even though he's a man in his early 40s now, he's a big man, a strong man, an athlete, and all the rest, but he's had these recurring injuries, and he was fighting through a bad elbow this week, and he fought through it and performed for the team anyway. So when it gets to that point in a player's career, and we know that the sand is running out of the hourglass, this was a great performance by Henrik Stenson. We don't know how many more are in store.
Hadn't been a good week for Patrick Reed, but he did beat Tyrrell Hatton 3-2 to make the scoreline 16.5, 10.5. And then the final match just went on and on to the 18th with the celebrations going on all around them. But what a finish, Gordon. I don't know if you saw it.
Well, I said they both finished for 3. Is that right?
Yeah, so Bryson DeChambeau, match is all square, nearly holes it, knocks it to a couple of inches. And Alex Noren, who was one up at the time, had to hole from about 30 feet to halve the hole. You think, you know, I thought he might even pick up and just say, you know, shake his hands, you know, let's get out of it. But he actually putted, and not only did he putt it, He patted it in the hole. Half the team ran on. I can't remember. I think it was Hatton jumped on top of him.
Thor Bjorn jumped in his arms, and he was hanging there when the rest of the guys came in.
And, yeah. You know, they poured champagne on top of his head, all that. What a way to finish the Ryder Cup.
Is it over? Yeah, in a way it's over, but it's not over for these guys that are still trying to win a point. It's, you know, you that's when it becomes pride then, and it showed an enormous amount of pride from both players in that last group.
Yeah, so the final scoreline, just to remind you, was Europe 17.5, USA 10.5. A wonderful, wonderful single session in Paris, which went Europe's way. Just to remind you, they actually won it 7.5 points to 4.5 points that Sunday session. So, where did it go wrong for the US team? Let's hear from their captain, Jim Furyk.
They got some momentum early. You know, there were some red scores up there. There was a time early in this afternoon where you looked up there, the top five or six matches had real good opportunities to earn points, kind of like they have done all week. The Europeans responded, were able to neutralize some of that. I think we got off to a good start, you know, in those first five or six matches, but it may have been better, and they were able then in the middle to put a bunch of points on the board and kind of shut down and thwart our efforts.
Why do you think the Europeans were just a little bit too strong, and why do you think from an American perspective things didn't quite pan out as you might have hoped?
I just think they did a great job top to bottom. I think Thomas was a wonderful captain. I think he put them in good positions, and I think those players played some unbelievable golf this year. They hit the key shots. They knocked in clutch putts. The crowd here was loud, and they knew this golf course very well. It's a great golf course. They were prepared.
Jim Furyk there. Wonderful speech at the opening ceremony. Spoke brilliantly at the closing ceremony as well. Ultimately, a losing captain, but a gentleman as well.
Oh, absolutely. I think Jim Furyk is – there's a lot of ways to look at this. Does it make a captain that lost a bad captain? What is it that you want from your captain? First and foremost, he's representing a country. Next, he's representing a team and doing the best job to ensure that they have all the tools that they need to perform as well as they possibly can perform. The United States team got beat this week by a better team. And I think if too much focus is placed upon what did the United States do wrong, it takes away the focus from what the European team did right. The European team did everything right competitively.
25 years it was coming into here since Team USA had won on European soil. As we've said, it's going to be 29 years now going into Rome. The fact that there's been this problem for the United States to win on foreign soil. Is there anything they can do different? I mean, after Glen Eagles, there was the task force and everything like that.
Yeah, I don't think they need to rebuild. You know, I don't think they have to put a new foundation in the ground. What I think for next time, from what I observed this week, what I think has to be done is better course management, a better understanding of what the course requires. Not every course, as we see with these best players, can you take their game and place it on that course and expect the course to yield to it. Sometimes you have to work with the course. And that would be the only observation that I made, that I saw a lot of tee balls that ended up in terrible positions in the rough simply because a decision was made about what club to play off the tee.
Gordon, would you concur with that?
Oh, definitely. I mean, all the gratitude and all the greatness is going on Thomas, but you can't say that Jim's a bad captain. I'm sure there's not a stone unturned, that he's tried to make the Americans' path to that first tee as clear as possible, as Thomas would have done. And then it becomes the player's responsibility what happens after that. And I think Matt's hit it right on the head. Their options, what they chose, were, to be fairly honest, were very, very poor at some times. And they just didn't get the hang of the golf course of what it needed. It needed a percentage more on the fairway. And they didn't really adapt to that quick enough. They played better today, but they'd lost it early in the week.
One of the big surprises, I suppose, from people is going to look at what Tiger Woods contributed this week in terms of 0. Given where he was a week earlier, you know, with the comeback victory at the Tour Championship, people will be hugely surprised. Is there a reason why he performed as he did this week, Matt?
A couple things. First of all, I sense that Tiger physically was tired. In terms of events played, I think this was his 19th event. for this season. And if you look at him historically, now you're going back into the early 2000s, into the 90s, where he has played that many events in one season. And this is a guy that you're talking about that's had multiple operations, including a back fusion. So I think that was some element of it. I also think there is the specter of the aura of Tiger Woods. From what I've seen so far with Tiger, I think he's a really good vice captain. I think he's put his arm around you and say, you can get through this thing and come on, team. He's really good at that. But when he's playing alongside someone as their partner, I think it puts a lot of pressure on that other person.
Yeah, Davis Love said something before this event. He said that Tiger Woods doesn't just intimidate his opponents, he also intimidates his teammates.
Oh, that's very interesting.
Yeah, but it felt like that now this was a different generation, that maybe that wouldn't be the case. But he played alongside Patrick Reed, and it was obviously a partnership that didn't work.
Yeah, there is no question the intimidation to intimidate a European has gone down largely in percentage-wise.
Well, that didn't seem the case at the Tour Championship when Justin Rose and Rory McIlroy were trying to close him down.
Well, yeah, but we've always got an example of it, but that is fact that he doesn't frighten players now as much as he used to. And also going back to the run he's had 3 years ago, the effort he's had to put in to achieve what he's done this year has been extraordinary. And, to say he's not match fit is, I don't know if it's the right way of putting it, but it's taken the toll on him physically and mentally. He looked tired this week. But don't forget that it's Tiger Woods, and that the year he's had, he would have bitten your hand off for it 2 years ago. So extraordinary comeback, and I just think it's too much now. It's just... he's catching up with him.
Matt, isn't not a case, you mentioned 19 events, but it's the run of events he's had. What's he played, 4 or 5 weeks in a row? Does Tiger ever do that?
Well, that's a whole other conversation, but that's the golf world today. You've got Rolex Series events, you've got FedEx Cup events, you've got Race to Dubai events, and I'm not just talking about Tiger, I'm talking about global players and where they make the choices to play. World Golf Championships, of course, the majors and all the rest, and it's not going to get any easier on players as they go down the roads. All these events are getting bigger and they're getting more important, and the points make a difference all the way around. It's hard for players. That's the reason why you're seeing, in general, I believe, more injuries from golfers than you have in the past, because there's a lot of demands upon them.
Hopefully next year he's not going to be chasing as much, and he'll be able to structure his season better, and so then he won't be to the cause that he's absolutely exhausted.
Yeah, but it's great to have Tiger here. It's great to see Tiger Woods back and what he's brought to the game of golf. So back to this Ryder Cup as a whole. Closing thoughts on 2018, the 42nd Ryder Cup here on the outskirts of Paris. Gordon, what's your kind of abiding memory then of the week?
The crowds on one. Just
what that grandstand was.
We'll have the memories, 8,000-9,000 standing there, baiting the players, encouraging the players. And also round 16, the chants. They've really come up with some great chants. We're on the left side of the fairway, you're on the right side. And the other guy goes, we're in the middle. So they're really getting topping the chants up. But just the whole atmosphere was incredible. They came in like ants. It was just swarming into the golf course. And then once the play started, I just thought the Europeans were fabulous.
I believe that this Ryder Cup was a transitional bridge. I believe that it will take some time for us to see it, but this was an incredibly significant Ryder Cup for the history of the event. We had multiple players on these teams collectively that played alongside of Ali, that played alongside of Seve, that played alongside of Sir Nick. Now we have players in their 20s that are going to carry this cup forward for the decades to come. We may not see Hedrick. We may not see Tiger. We may not see these players back again. This could have been the end of it. This was a very important Ryder Cup.
Okay, well, that's about all we've got time for. Thanks for listening and contacting us throughout the week. We really have loved bringing you all the drama, tension, and excitement from this 42nd Ryder Cup. So, Europe regained the trophy after what was a titanic tussle against the United States. Will they be able to retain that crown, though, in 2 years' time at Whistling Straits in America? We already can't wait to find out. But that's all for now from France and from myself, Richard Kaufman, and everybody here at the Ryder Cup radio team. And as they say in France,
Au revoir.
You've been listening to Ryder Cup Radio, presented by Econocom.